the issues, and the people. Join us every Sunday on Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips.
Metro Talk's first Sunday political roundtable debate. Here they are. The politicians are in-house. And our telephone number 301-230-0980. Pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. Nicholas Sarwark, Libertarian. Good morning.
Morning, Jerry.
So what do you think, my dear friend, about the mistakes in the intelligence report brought out about the Bush administration?
I think that the mistakes really have to do more with policy than with specific intelligence failures. And I think that our policies in international relations are really what need to change, not the specifics of what CIA agents are in what place at what time.
Hmm. Okay. Jim Pomeroy, Republican. The one question to you, Mr. Pomeroy, would be the gubernatorial race of Virginia.
Well, what's very interesting is after listening repeatedly in the media and from the whiny liberals about how we need higher taxes in Virginia and that there, you know, basically is not enough money after double-digit increases, both candidates from the major parties for governor have introduced tax caps. Republicans and Democrats alike in Virginia evidently agree taxes are too high.
Hmm. Okay. Emily Leffler, independent, is with us. And Emily Leffler, I have to ask you about the renaming of BWI Airport. Why is there controversy about Thurgood Marshall?
Well, it's going to take a lot of money. We're talking about possibly $3 million for expenses that would be associated with renaming an airport to jump on that bandwagon of renaming municipal airports around the country. And I think with the crisis that our states are in today financially, if we're going to spend that money, why not use it to honor his legacy, help the students in Maryland that have suffered tuition hikes because of mismanagement of funds and tax cuts, and name a scholarship fund in his name instead.
Okay. Also, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, she has a lot to say about all of these issues, especially a rebuttal to what I hear from my friend over here, the Republican. Patrice?
Yeah, as far as the taxes go in Virginia, what we have Tim Kaine offering is a serious program to cut local real estate taxes by funding all of the state-mandated programs that Kilgore will not be funding.
Okay. And last but not least, Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Eric, I guess the question to you is, with the death of the Pope and certainly world news all over now on the front pages covering all of this, we don't hear much out of the Bush White House right now. What do you think the good Bush is doing?
I think he's laying low. I think after he saw the effect of his interference and his brother's interference in the whole Schiavo case in Florida, and the corresponding drop in his polling numbers, I think he decided, well, let's, you know, let other issues sort of take front stage for a little while, and let us drop into the background.
Okay. So those are the views of our various politicians. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, on the Verizon Wireless System. Let me ask you about some of the local races. For instance, we talked about the gubernatorial race in Virginia, and there's a lot of kick behind that. Kilgore, who's been the front runner as far as the Republicans are concerned, they say there's a lot of baggage that he carries to the polls for voters, along with Kaine, who is a lieutenant governor. And Kaine is so quiet, way back in the corner, no one even knows he's existing. But the big name that popped out of the news 2 weeks ago was the name POTTS, Potts. And I'm not talking about Potts Pizza. I'm talking about Potts, the Republican that Republicans don't like in Virginia.
Who?
Potts.
Who? Ross Potts?
Yes, Ross Potts.
I think he used to be a Republican at one point. I don't really
remember. From Winchester, excuse me, stepping on the host line. From Winchester, Virginia. Do you know him?
Yes, Ross Potts is an accomplished liar. He lied to me. I'll tell you a little story about Russ Potts. I went on...
May I put a disclaimer on this? This is not Metro Talk talking. This is strictly Jim Pomeroy, who is the president of the VirginiaGOP.com.
The lawyers.
I don't use that phrase lightly. Russ Potts lied to my face about his agenda when he ran for re-election. There was a primary, which he won by a very, very narrow margin, and it was a district where he was concerned about winning in the fall. And so he came to me and he promised me. He says, Jim, he says, look, you know, I know people say I'm going to raise taxes. I'm not. I promise you. You know, but basically, he said, I'm not the guy that you think that in the campaign in the primary came out. I'm not going to raise taxes. On and on and on and on to convince me. I actually went on TV in Virginia to speak on his behalf at a debate against his opponent. And I backed up Russ Potts based on what Russ Potts told me. When I went down to Richmond after they raised, when they were in the middle of raising the taxes to a record amount, mm-hmm. I asked him about that, and he just laughed at me.
He did.
He laughed.
Jim,
if,
you know one to be laughed
never,
at.
Well, you know what? The thing was, he was so blatant. He knew he was going to raise taxes. He knew he was lying about his position, and he repeated the lie because he knew it would get him elected.
Well, now let me ask Patrice McKinney here. Are they afraid? I mean, the Republicans, not just Jim Homley. I mean, the whole Republican Party in Virginia really made this man an outcast. They won't invite him to meetings. They won't. They don't like him. From the way Jim Homley talks, it sounds like he's the devil of. I mean, you know, it sounds pretty bad.
Yeah. Well,
are they worried that he might split the vote?
They're absolutely, and they should be, because the introduction of Russell Potts into the campaign has will probably have the effect of handing this to Tim Kaine. Now let's go back and look at the governing magazine. Tim Kaine has been working with Mark Warner. We talk about name
recognition.
Tim Kaine
is the Democrat.
Tim Kaine is lieutenant governor right now. He's a Democrat.
He's
been working with Mark Warner. That together as a team, they were rated by Good Governing magazine as number one in the country for good governing management practices. Now you can't beat that.
Jim Gilmore got a higher ranking from them when he was governor.
Yeah, well, when Jim Gilmore has been panned by Governing Magazine.
No, he got the award.
He was panned by Governing Magazine in recent editions, saying that Gilmore actually betrayed the good ethics governance of Virginia.
So the point here is that it's going to be a really big gubernatorial race in Virginia.
It's going to be hot.
And would you say close?
I think it's going to be
what do you say,
Tim Kaine, without a doubt, because together he is best positioned to continue the wonderful work that Mark Warner has done.
One quick thing about Governing Magazine, which has no credibility. They had given Governor Gilmore the highest ranking before, and then a couple years later, the publisher or the editor did an editorial about how terrible the DMV was. Hold on, because he had had personal problems at the DMV. So because this editor had had personal problems at the DMV with his paperwork,
I really don't want to talk about it. I really want to move on. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Now, let me talk to the other panelists here. Boy, a Democrat and a Republican in the same studio. It's hard, folks. It's hard. Telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless Systems, our telephone number. And Jack and Franconia, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
The Republican people on your panel, I'd like to just post two fast items and see what they comment on it. One is Representative Jim McClary of Louisiana, Republican from Louisiana. He's President Bush's point man for privatization of Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
His campaign has received over $200,000 from the very Wall Street firms that stand to gain from privatization. And they say, well, it's not a lot of money. You look at these S&P 500 funds and over the course of 75 years and tell me it's not a lot of money. That's the one point. The other point was The Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute, two right-wing think groups, for 25 years have been wanting to dismantle Social Security. For anybody out there listening, that should serve as a warning. Would you please comment?
Okay, thank you very much, Jack. Have a good day.
First, a comment. As far as I know, those firms give money to pretty much everyone across the board, Democrat and Republican. Large Wall Street firms give money to everybody.
The Heritage Foundation?
No. The first question. The first question was about Wall Street firms giving money to politicians. As far as the caller's point, I think he misstated a little bit. Cato is a libertarian think tank. Heritage is a right-wing think tank. And yes, for 25 years, Cato has been at the front of saying there's problems with Social Security. They need to be addressed. And they haven't been addressed for 25 years.
Emily Leffler, Independent.
Look, regarding the issues of ethics and lobbyist money and funding, and, you know, The Republican Party stinks of ethics issues right now when it comes to lobbying money. When you look at the issues that have been going on with Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay. You know, the casino, the gambling money, you know, all these things. It reeks. It stinks. And, you know, the problem here is that, I mean, they're trying to rewrite the rules so that, you know, they can get their folks off. I mean, the problem here is, you know, there's enough here to really make us, you know, really get some interest and get some force behind it in this country and get these folks out. But we haven't been hearing enough from the Democrats about it.
What about that Democrat?
Well, I think that the Democrats have been speaking out against Tom DeLay, speaking for himself. I mean, his actions are quite, you know, quite clear.
Yeah, but, you know, I agree with Emily, though. I don't hear much from the Democrats. I really don't. It's like you guys have folded up cots and gone home or something. You know, I mean, I don't see you jumping on over. And the one thing I know in a political debate I had last week with both sides of the party, both sides of the aisle, the question on Social Security, the Democrats have great criticism about the Bush administration and about Social Security. But what's your plan?
Well, Jerry, I think the Democrats have come out with, you know, raising the age, changing the benefits. They clearly have come out against the privatization, the personal accounts, whatever it's called this month. But they've set forth a number of alternatives and have called for, you know, a complete review of
Eric,
all the alternatives.
Eric, I want to respond to a couple of points. The first is when you elect Harry Reid as your Senate leader, I mean, I think that indicates the degree to which you're really willing to fight. I mean, the guy's basically a Republican. And as far as the issue of Social Security and Democrats trying to offer an alternative plan, the issue is if somebody manufactures a fake crisis and then asks you to try to offer a solution, I don't think that's necessarily a fair situation to say. I mean, I think there's a fair amount of argument that can be made. There really isn't a very significant problem. There are some tweaks that may need to be done to the system, but it doesn't need to be overhauled.
Emily?
Well, not only that, but the Republicans have yet to fully reveal what their plan is. They've hinted at it. They've discussed it. The president is going around the country campaigning on it. However, when the Democrats say, hey, no, this is a bad idea, that's a bad idea, the Republicans respond with, well, how can you criticize it when we haven't fully discussed it yet? So, you know, they want to push it. They want to campaign for it. They want to sell it, but they haven't fully revealed what the plan is.
So
the problem on the other side of the aisle is that the Democrats, they have a lot of great ideas. They can talk about it, but they can't sell it. They don't have the PR machine that the Republicans
have. This is our first Sunday political roundtable. We are talking with Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, along with Emily Leffler, Independent, and also Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and from the Green Party, Eric Mickelson. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. A few more comments. We want to wrap this up. Jim Pomeroy.
Oh, I guess the official policy of the Democrats is there is no problem with Social Security. So I guess it would almost serve them right if President Bush would come out and say, you know what, fine, no problem with Social Security, and we just let it collapse.
Yeah,
in 15
but one
years.
Thing, when you take that, when you start tinkling with that check that that lady receives every year and every month, you know, they may not find a problem either.
You know,
they're not going to get it for long if we don't fix the system.
Yeah, this is a classic tactic of the Republicans. In no case ever have the Democrats said there's no problem with Social Security. The Democrats have been pushing for some sort of reform for some time, but we are quite well aware that there's not a major crisis in hand. If we want to look at where the crisis is right now, it's in our intelligence agencies, and the president would be better off putting his attention, focusing on the real true crisis that exists in our country right now, rather than manufacturing crises that he thinks are going to help him politically.
All right, Pat in Alexandria, don't go anywhere. Nicholas Sawalk, your friend, is on the line.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning,
good morning.
Nicholas. How
good morning,
are you?
Pat. I'm good.
Excellent. I'm really sorry, Emily, but I'm going to have to disagree with you.
Come on, Pat.
You know, and this is not defending Mr. Pomeroy, trust me.
But oh, come on.
I have yet to see the Democrats come out with any full-formed or even half-ass-formed responses to Republican moves. Do not tell me that we should turn our eyes away from Social Security so the Republicans can loot it while we worry about our intelligence agencies, which were bad under Clinton, which were bad under Jimmy Carter. Okay? The Democrats couldn't even get somebody to say they were sorry the Pope was dead. And they got Catholics in leadership.
Well, Bill
what
Clinton.
What you need to do.
Bill Clinton.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, hey, Teddy Kennedy, I think he forgot he got baptized.
Right.
But anyway, the thing is, you are not developing your points of strike. You're not developing your future leaders. You have walked away from the poor and the challenged, which you normally was your base, and you stand there and you point fingers. So grow up and start developing a plan. Otherwise, the Republicans will be in for the next 20 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Jerry, have a good day.
Love you, Pat. Thank you very much. Eric, very quickly.
Nick.
Eric's over there.
One of the things that Pat brings up, and one of the things that the previous caller actually brought up, Jack brought up, is that the Republicans in general have this long-term strategy for what their policy changes are going to be, and the Democrats kind of reinvent their strategy every 2 to 4 years based on who the front runner is in their primary race.
Okay, let's talk to Terry in Midland. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to say two things. One to the Democratic lady that, as a Virginia resident, I don't think Mark Warner's done a wonderful job, and I'm so glad there's no such thing as a Virginia governor being able to succeed themselves.
Mm.
And also about Social Security, I did hear one person comment that it would be a wonderful idea that if everybody in Congress were on Social Security, they'd fix it in a hurry.
Right.
Because they're on government, retirement, civil service, and they're not going to have a problem. My suggestion, and I think it's a good one, although it's basically raising taxes, is there's no reason in the world to have Social Security taxes stop at $92,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people that are making $150,000, $200,000 between the husband and wife income. There's no reason to have a Social Security tax being paid on amounts up to $150,000.
Okay.
And then that way you've got more money going in. You're not taking anything away from anybody. It may be raising taxes, but people are making the money now.
Right.
You know, the income's coming in. 20 years ago, when you're only making $60,000, but that's one thing. But now you're making $150,000, $200,000. Let the base tax go up.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Nice calling, and thanks very much for your call. Very quickly, I saw Emily's hand.
Well, yes, Terry's absolutely right. Equitable taxing would be one solution. This is something that Democrats have broached. Pat was right. We're not seeing this from the Democrats. You have to look for it.
Mm.
But this is something the Democrats have
talked about.
I'm trying
to find a Democrat
about.
Other than Patrice.
But, you know, that would be one way to solve the crisis. As
right.
There was an AARP commercial out where they said, you know, you don't have to tear down the house because the sink is broken.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do away with Social Security, which is essentially what the Republicans are proposing.
Mm-hmm.
To fix it.
Well, yeah, they'd like to put the money, you know, where? With their buddies.
Well, right. if the plumbing is
not
gone,
up Enron again.
You may not have to burn the house down, but if the plumbing is gone, you certainly have to rework the plumbing.
Yeah, but you also have to look out for those pipes going next door to your big corporate buddies. All right. Here's Ann. Let me talk to Ann in Ashburn. Good morning, Ann.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm going to piggyback on what the last caller said about raising the base and take that a step further, talking about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an independent, by the way.
All right.
The plan I think that would be best overall for many reasons is to extend the base out as much money as you make. In other words, forget the cap and reduce the rate. Would make the taxing system more progressive, which would not only help people, low-wage earners, but would also help the self-employed who has to pay both halves of the tax,
mm-hmm.
and would also help the small business person who generally hires people who make under $90,000, and so his rate would be reduced on the small business owner's rate would be reduced on the employer's half. So it would stimulate the economy at the local levels with the self-employed and the small business, which is exactly what we need to combat the effects of outsourcing.
Okay.
And secondly, it also gives us the wherewithal to raise the minimum wage. Basically, you're raising it when you reduce the rate because you're going to have more take-home pay in the pockets of the workers.
Okay.
And it also would allow businesses to actually raise the rate.
Very good.
Okay.
I love you. You're a sweetheart. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know what I like about you, Ann? You're driving your point home, and I don't blame you.
Okay, thank Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. What do you think about Ann's points there?
Well, I think that Ann's points bring up the fundamental problem with Social Security, which is that we have a program that was designed to only catch the people who fell through all the cracks of family, community, charity, their own retirement savings, and provide them a very minimum level of sustenance. And that plan is being used right now as a primary retirement mechanism. And when we talk about it, we talk about let's put more money into the system so that we can get more money back out of the system for beneficiaries. And there's really a disconnect between what the plan was designed to do and what the American people at this point expect it to do. And that's the crisis. The crisis is that we have what is essentially a last resort for old people so they don't have to live on the street. And we're treating it like a pension plan where, you know, we have to make sure it's solvent forever and ever and ever. We need to get this debate down to agreeing about what we're talking about.
Okay. Folks, let's turn to the issue of the day. We can kick around Social Security and all and everything else that we've discussed so far. But we'd like for you, my dear friends, if you're listening, to call us at 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System to give us a call, because we want to spend these last minutes this Sunday morning on the legacy, the life of a man that gave so much to so many people. Just, you know, it's amazing how we live in this world and we know about so many leaders and people we vote for, we have the freedom for in America to vote for, but throughout the world, when you find someone so far away, thousands of miles away, to touch little kids, to touch the youth of today, and I can remember here in Washington in 1979 when Pope John Paul II was here, and I remember going down and so many people lined the streets to see this pontiff, the Roman Catholic Pope, come to America, which America's always been on the controversial list of the Vatican for so many, many years, all the way back to John the 23rd. I remember reading his book and his encyclical where he talks about America, democracy and capitalism, not good bedfellows. But I can also remember that day that Pope John Paul II was here in Washington when he stood on the balcony at the rectory of St. Matthew's and he said, John Paul II wants you. People felt the warmth of this man as it has radiated throughout the world. Comments from the panel, and we're going to open our phones because we'd like to get comments from you at 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Let me say this, my friend. Regardless your religion, regardless what you think or your ideologies, it is so nice here on this third day of April, year 2005, unfortunately of the death of a pontiff, but it is so nice to have someone to say so many good things about in our world. That's my comment for this day. Patrice, what's yours?
Well, Jerry, I'd say that this generation, we've been very, very lucky to have somebody like John Paul. We were blessed to have somebody who was such a strong symbol of peace and dignity in this world. He was able to meet with leaders of every religion and every country around the world in a way that justified their existence and allowed them to be. But also at the same time, he was able to stand firm in his message of peace and love.
Yeah, Eric.
Well, again, it's important to have peacemakers in the world. And John Paul, for all the other things that can be said about him, obviously was a dedicated supporter of or opponent of things like the death penalty, of the war in Iraq, of basically human aggression, and that's certainly an admirable quality.
Right. Let me turn to Nicholas Sawalk. Nicholas, you're a young man. I guess maybe not to put you on the spot, but this might be the only pope that you ever had seen or even had any information about in your lifetime.
Right. Actually, I think this papacy lasted just about the same length as my life.
Right.
And what is interesting to me is the contrast between the early years of John Paul's papacy, when he was fighting so strongly against communism in Eastern Europe and really was the first quote-unquote rock star pope. I've heard that referred to him. A very vibrant man, big in the arts, and a great athlete. in his native Poland. And it's interesting the shift from that sort of radicalism of his the early years of his papacy to this very staunch conservatism, at least on social issues, over the last 10 years. And I think that his legacy, at least in the near term, is going to be for things like Humanae Vitae, where he came out against stem cell research, against abortion, against euthanasia. And a lot of that is going to be remembered instead of the instrumental role he played in providing liberty and freedom for, you know, Eastern Bloc countries and really coming out as a radical and fighting against the entrenched powers and getting rid of the Catholic Church's politics of appeasement that they had up through Vatican II with the Eastern European powers.
Right. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, on the Verizon Wireless System. I'd like to hear from you, my dear friend, your comments about what you think about certainly the life of John Paul II. It's affected all of us, regardless whether you're a Roman Catholic or whether you live in Rome or in Italy, or regardless what your pathway in life is, it certainly has affected all of us, and no one can deny that, although I don't put much faith in what I see on television and the television news, because sometimes they overkill everything, every issue, but this seems to pour out beyond just the news, network news cast, it seems to pour out as you talk to people on the street. Jim Pomeli, your comments.
Well, you know, it's similar to the feelings that I had when President Reagan died, and I think it is a tremendous blessing that at a point in the 70s and 80s where his native Poland was under a communist dictatorship, where communism was on the march, where, in fact, the West was losing the Cold War by a variety of measures. And at that point in history, we ended up with the Pope, President Reagan, and Margaret Thatcher all coming in at about the same time, at a point when everyone thought we would lose the Cold War, most people did, and we ended up winning through a very firm policy and a belief that it could be done. And I think when the Pope went to Poland and made that point, when he made that point around the world in the face of overwhelming odds, it is sad to think now that of the three of them that won the Cold War and defeated one of the greatest tyrannies known to man, that only Margaret Thatcher is left.
Emily Leffler.
Well, certainly it's a sad day when there's a death of someone of his import. It's the end of an era. And, you know, the legacy of Pope John Paul II is the struggle and the challenge that he had to meet in straddling the controversies of the modern church. We've discussed the fall of communism, you know, some of the difficult issues with the denunciation of birth control and fights against women's issues and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely a day to remember these things that he worked through in his lifetime in his papacy.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. This first Sunday, our political roundtable, we thought we would take the last few minutes of our roundtable to talk with you and to talk with our panelists who represent certainly many ideological pathways politically, and to see what they thought about this great world leader that has passed on, Pope John Paul II. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System, absolutely free call. I'd like to hear from you. Get as many comments as we can in the 10 minutes that we have left. Brenda in Capitol Heights, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Yes. In my opinion, the Pope was the ideal leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that God prepared him for that position because
mm-hmm.
of all the tragedies that he suffered. That when you suffer like that, that builds character. And it gives you an opportunity to deal with people at all levels and have empathy for other people. Instead of having a leader born with a silver spoon in his mouth and telling you to pull yourself up by your bootstraps
mm-hmm.
and talking one thing about faith and everything and then doing another.
Mm-hmm.
That's my comment.
Thank you very much, Brenda. I appreciate your call. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System. That's our telephone number. If you have a comment as we kind of look back on this great man's life, we hear so much about it, certainly in the news, and I know everybody has talked about it, and we have 9 days, or I guess now 8 days to go for the whole procedures of of the pontiff's burial, this, whether he's going to be buried in Poland or at the Vatican. Certainly the mass of Christian burial, which is held for most for Roman Catholics when they die, and I guess this is a mass for the Pope, which they say will be held around Thursday, I believe, but right now he's lying in state. And leaders from all over the world, you know, President Bush says that he will be there. The Prime Minister of Israel is planning to take a delegate, some dignitaries to Rome. They're expecting some, maybe 1 million or more people to come to Rome because of the center focus of this great man's life. And that's what we thought we would spend the last moments of Metro Talk on this very special Sunday as we kind of share a few comments. Nicholas.
I think the big question with the larger than life nature of John Paul's biography. I mean, from you know, basically being what's the word, ordained underground in Poland and you know, living almost like a spy. What next? Who can follow in those shoes?
Well, it's
as
a different
the next
world.
Pope?
It's a different world.
And,
I mean,
and will the Catholic Church become turned towards more of a traditionalist conservative line and away from the radicalism of John Paul II, or will they try and follow up on that and the strides he's made in sort of reinforcing change, and will they try and move farther? And
well, I think it's a very, very different world. I was watching the editor, one of the editors of Newsweek magazine, yesterday over the weekend on the Today Show, who spoke about how John Paul II tried to protect the rock, the church itself, in its own traditions. But I think as we hear conversations, and it's interesting, some of the commentators, although some of the anchors and commentators really need to do their homework before they go on the air. Here was a bishop speaking in the Vatican last night, and this network correspondent said, well, the priest, but well, anyway, I won't go there. But anyway, it's a bishop, you know, it's a different rank. But anyway, you know, this the guy from Newsweek magazine, I thought he was very good because he said that while people criticized him on these traditional this traditional support, he was still trying to protect what he felt the Catholic Church was. And this is where, and this is a transitional period, wouldn't you say, Patrice?
It is a transitional period, and I think it's very interesting because while the Church we view as political and has been political over the centuries, it is essentially a religious institution. And so it's not necessary for it to change so much with the times. It has to stand for something. And John Paul brought it back to that. After the fall of communism, it was his fear that there would be a leaning towards a more secular approach to the Catholic Church. And he really brought that back and stood the Catholic Church on its core.
As the American Catholic Church... what did they? There was a lot of conflict between a lot of controversy with the American Church and the Vatican. Certainly, President Bush went to the Vatican last summer. Some accused him of going to win Catholic votes. But what about the American Church? There is a great difference, is there not, Jim?
Well, I mean, and you could speak to that more than I. I'm Presbyterian, but yes, they had. You know, a number of members of the American Catholic Church had rebelled against the pontiff, but you know, part of you know his platform, he was very firm in where he stood. He you know, it was a continuation, and he was very firm in his positions. And whether you liked him or liked those positions or not, that was that. And you know, quite frankly, I thought he was you know, speaking as a Presbyterian, I would say he was a wonderful pontiff. He was a great world leader, and I agree with you that it doesn't matter whether you're Catholic, Presbyterian, Methodist, whatever, that he really was a world leader in defeating communism and in really standing for something.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. We're kind of kicking around a few thoughts this morning on this very special Sunday, the Sunday that the world loses a pontiff, but a pontiff that is... well-recognized and very much loved around the world. Michelle in Gainesville, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was a teenager in the 60s and did a lot of religious exploring, going to youth groups and churches with different friends of mine in different faiths. And as a teenager, I got a lot of message from these faiths saying, basically, you know, well, we have the answers, the others are wrong. And what that did was actually push me away from religion altogether,
mm-hmm.
Particularly the Catholic Church. again, this is the teenager's view. And I really, while I disagree with many of his policies, I think the fact that this Pope reached out to other faiths, being of other people's convictions,
mm-hmm.
is going to be probably, for people like myself, the greatest part of his legacy.
What does this do for the relationship of Catholics to Protestants, as Jim was alluding to? Already we talked about this man's bridge to the Muslim world as well as to the Jewish world. But what do you think? Do you think that we as people can look at a leader like this and maybe open our doors to each other and say, hey, we're all one family?
I would certainly hope so. I know that, for me, that's what gives me respect for the man.
Or do we go back to a division or a society of saying those folks over there and those folks over there?
Are you still talking to Michelle?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I would hope that we don't. I think that those kinds of divisions have been the root of a lot of the problems we face in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I disagree with many of his policies, but the fact that he reached out like that and could stand above, I guess, the ego of the church and say, well, you believe differently than I do, but I still embrace you as you are, is very important.
But Patrice, isn't that happening in our society a lot of people disagree with George Bush, but you unite behind him in some things.
Well, you know, you'd like to think it was. I'm not sure, quite sure it is. I think that the Pope set a really fantastic example of, you know, having his own firm beliefs and not wavering in those at all, and yet still being willing to accept and embrace other people's beliefs, disagreeing but respecting their right to have their beliefs. And if we can attain that as a society, I think, the world will be a better place.
Yeah, I think with George Bush having the lowest approval rating since his election,
right.
I think that's a poor analogy. But in
Jim
terms
Pomedy
of the church,
cause of that,
In terms of the church, it's a little too soon to say what the repercussions will be in terms of larger interrelationships. I think that a lot of it will depend on the direction the church takes with the selection of the next pope and where they go with that.
Well, the future of the church and the future of the world and how it will affect, as you put it. Emily, we'll see in days to come, because there's going to be an election of a new pope. Anyway, want to thank my guests this morning. They are our political roundtable, certainly. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. Jim Homily, Republican. Emily Leffler, Independent. Democrat, Patrice McKinney. And Green Party, Eric Mickelson. Thank you very much. We're going to end this morning, as we've said in our conversation about the life of the pope that ended yesterday, with Foray's Requiem, as we hear in Paradiso. I'm Jerry Phillips, Clear Channel Radio, Metro Talk. Peace.